Hi, everybody. Can you hear me? I'm using my phone to call in.
Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, okay, great. Good, good, good. Been having computer problems lately, so I figured out that I could see you on video, but call in on my phone in case something happens with the internet. So good to see you guys. Yay! I love video. Well, I hate video, but I also love video. Both. But it's so good. Some of you I'm seeing on video for the first time. I didn't get to see you last week, so this is awesome. We'll wait one more moment, and then we'll get started. Let's see. All right. So we are going to be continuing today with our questioning module. We've got call two of our questioning module, and I'm going to be giving you a lot of content today. So it's a little bit different where, you know, usually almost every single one of our other calls, we do a lot of processing and inner work along with the skills. Today's class, we're not really going to do processing. I'm not going to really ask you too many inner questions. What I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be going through a lot of different types of questions that you can be using when you work with clients. And I'm also going to be going through why to use them, how to use them, when to use them. The idea is for you to kind of have like a salad bar of options in your client calls. And, you know, a lot of you ask incredible questions already, I know. And my sense is that you do it intuitively, almost without really thinking about it. Today's call, I'm going to give you a lot of different types of questions to think about. Some you probably are already asking, but we're going to get to the reasoning behind why to ask them or why you've been asking them but not maybe aware that that's why you've been asking them. And this is going to help you really sharpen your skills around questioning. You're not meant to integrate everything that I'm going to be sharing today by the end of the call because it's a lot of information, but you'll have it for yourself. Now, if you're a seasoned practitioner, I want you to pay special attention to our class today because particularly if we're seasoned, we can get into a rut with the questions that we ask. We kind of can ask the same types of questions over and over again, and they're probably really good questions. So it's not about stopping to use the questions that you tend to rely on, that you fall back on, but it's really good to have a variety of questions in your toolbox and at your fingertips. So I want you to pay extra special attention. And I'll share with you guys that when I first became a practitioner, I was terrified that I wasn't going to know what to say to a client. Like a client would share something and then it would come time for me to ask a question or, you know, whatever it is, and I wouldn't know what to do. And so for the first 6 months of my coaching career, I had a list of 50 different coaching questions that I could, like I would have it in front of me at every session. It would be right there on my computer or I have it printed out. And it was good to just have those variety of questions in front of me. I rarely actually ended up looking at the paper during a session, you know, and read off one of the questions, but it was a really nice safety crutch to have during the session. So I mentioned this for a couple of reasons. Number one, because I'll be giving you different lists types of questions and the information that we cover today, and then just kind of like a list of questions. So if you need a crutch like I did, particularly if you're just starting out, you'll have that crutch. And then the other reason, again, I just want to keep on reinforcing that it's okay if you're nervous and not confident and all that. That doesn't mean that you can't be, you know, doing the work with clients. You can still do great work with clients and still be questioning yourself. So all that being said, we'll jump in to these different types of questions in a moment. I just realized there was one other thing I wanted to share, which is for those of you that weren't able to be with us live for our session last week, our Wednesday session last week, it was a 2-hour for newer and tentative coaches. First of all, if you are a newer or tentative coach, I highly recommend listening to the entire recording. It will be really helpful. But if you are a seasoned, confident coach, I still recommend listening to the last 45 minutes or so of that session. I did some model coaching with Rose, and we were able to go really deep, and then we broke down the coaching that I did, and it's really instructive. And so if you are someone who is like me and most people, and you learn from observing and from listening and watching, it's a really great resource for you to have. And again, thank you, Rose, for being so vulnerable and just allowing us all to go so deep. It was so moving. All right. So all that being said, take a moment, and I'd love for you to just pop into the chat. I'll ask a couple of quick questions. So number one, on a scale of 1 to 10, how good or how masterful do you feel about asking questions? Like 10 is like you always are spot on, asking a question that you just love, and 1 is not so much. Nicole's a 6. Swati's a 5. Seeing a lot of 5s, 6s, 7. Yeah. So I'm seeing a lot of like between 5s and 7s here. And an 8. Yep, you were a teacher for 35 years. That will help with the questioning 100%. I am not one to make kind of crazy promises, but I am positive that through this questioning module, wherever you're assessing, first of all, wherever you're assessing yourself, I promise you, you're at least a point or two higher than where you're assessing yourself. But beyond that, using all of the tools that we're looking at, there is no doubt in my mind that all of you can get to an 8 or a 9 or a 10, like within weeks, if you just practice. If you're willing to experiment with different types of questions and to take risks. And also if you're willing sometimes to take, like we were talking about last week, that brief pause right before you ask a question to get the words together. If you isolate that muscle, just like you were on a machine at the gym isolating a muscle, if you isolate that muscle for the next couple of weeks, you are going to see such a difference with your questions. All right, I've got I've got 20 different types of questions that I want to go through, categories of questions. There's obviously many more than this, but these are some of the most common. The first we already know. We covered it in our Creating Awareness module, but it's such an important one that I'm going to cover it again. It's the Am I getting that right? Line of questioning, right? So we want to use the am I getting that right after we've reflected back to a client or created awareness by mirroring. So examples of the am I getting that right question is, as we've looked at already, I'm hearing X, am I getting that right? Here's another example. And by the way, I'm going to send you guys a resource sheet with all of these questions. If you want to take notes, take notes. If not, just take it in. It sounds like you're saying why, right? Whatever you're hearing. It sounds like you're saying why. Did I hear that correctly? Or as you were speaking, I could almost sense Z, or I could almost sense that Z is happening. You know, you're evolving in this way, or you're about to be ready to X, or whatever it is. Am I getting that right? So again, whenever we create awareness, whenever we reflect to a client, we don't want that awareness or that reflection to be taken as truth with a capital T unless the client feels that it is true for them. That's why the am I getting it right is so important. We don't want to end up being that guru. Next category, and I'll do like a couple of categories and then we'll pause and I'll do some more. I call these definition questions. So you want to, well, let me say this. You might think that you know what a client means when they use a certain term or say a certain concept, but you don't ever want to make assumptions unless the client has used that term before or you've spoken about this thing before. You as the practitioner might actually be working with a different definition than your client, and so it's important to ask your client. The other reason to ask definition questions is because it can be really, really powerful for an individual to define something out loud for themselves. It's a way of creating even deeper awareness around something that they think they know. So for example, when you ask a client to define if they're talking about freedom, you know, if you ask them to define what freedom means to them, or family, or success, or balance, it can be a very empowering moment to create a definition for yourself. And probably each of you have had this experience at one time or another, defining a concept for yourself. So examples of definition questions are, what does X mean to you? If a client is speaking about freedom, what does freedom mean to you? Or define Y, if a client is speaking about balance, define balance. Or explain Z a little bit more. Here's another type of definition question that can be really powerful. How is X different than Y? So let's say you are in a conversation with a client and they're talking about their schedule and how they...
I'm hearing and I can't hear you.
Okay.
Oh. Getting worse, I said. Wait, hold on. That's Kristen. I put her on mute. Okay. Let's say you're talking to a client and they're talking about how they really need more space. They just need more space. And then they start talking about their schedule and changes that they want to make in their schedule. A great example of a definition question could be, how is space in your schedule different than space in your mind or body? Right? So getting the you're bringing a new concept in and asking for a definition between the two. Or let's say a client is speaking about self-trust. How is self-trust different than self-confidence? Or how is service, this comes up a lot with clients because I have clients that are so service-oriented. They really want to help. They really, really want to support their clients. But sometimes without realizing it because of past patterning or something that's happened in their lives, the desire to serve turns into something else. So an example of a definition question here is, how is service different from servitude? Do you see how a question like that can be very powerful? It can be a powerful moment of creating awareness. It's a type of way of reflecting a hard truth, right? Because you sense that the client may be in servitude energy, not in service energy. And then it can allow your client to begin to really parcel out the difference between these things. Any questions on definition questions? Let me get my email turned off here. No? Okay. Next type of question, clarifying current situation questions. So as practitioners who like to go deep, I know it's like we want to just quick, like get to the layers and the depth and all of that. But oftentimes when a client is speaking, we actually need to gather more details on a current situation before we can go deep. We need to gather those details for us as practitioners, because that way we'll understand the situation more and understand how to lead the client and where the conversation wants to go. But it's also can be very helpful for a client to clarify their current situation, because sometimes a client can be sharing, this is what happened, and they're overlooking certain details that actually make all of the difference. So when you're asking questions that are going to clarify the situation at hand, what you want to make sure of, and this goes back to what we were looking at last week with questioning foundations, where questions should come from, you want to make sure that you only ask as much as you need, right? So you want to always be curious when you ask a question, but you want to make sure that it's not curiosity for the sake of curiosity, but it's related to the bigger goals at hand, whether it's inner or outer goals. Or else things can get a little too, you know what I mean by chatty? Not that you're not chatting with your client, but it can get too chatty and then off topic. So example of clarifying current situation questions are, what exactly did she say during the team meeting, right? If a client is talking about a team meeting that happened and things just went awry and they sucked and whatever and somebody insulted her, well, what exactly did this person say during the team meeting? Here's another example. Sometimes I'll have a client that says, I launched this launch and nobody signed up, right? Well, I'm going to ask a clarifying question there. You know, when you say nobody signed up, what does that mean? Was there any interest at all? Were there any prospects at all? Or did things fall apart in the enrollment conversation? Or did people sign up and then they backed out? Or, you know, what's going on, right? And you'll notice some of those are yes or no questions. For clarifying current situation questions, sometimes we want to ask the question and then give some examples so the client, because if I just said, well, what do you mean that nobody signed up? There may not be places to go. So you want to kind of give some yes or no examples there for people. Again, it will help you as a practitioner. Like for me, I'm also going into consulting mode also to help this client pinpoint what she can do differently, right, to turn the launch around. So that's one reason for questions like this. But the other is that it can be really helpful for a client to see, you know, in this example, you know, actually, there were 10 people that I spoke to, right? So people were interested. So part of this marketing is working. And then here's where it's not working, right? So we want to clarify. Or if a client says that date went badly, how did the date go badly? Tell me a little bit more about X, Y, or Z. Another clarifying current situation question that I sometimes really like to ask is, what are you overlooking here, right? Because sometimes I don't know, you know, with the back to like the, when you say nobody signed up, you know, was there interest, you know, this and that, sometimes you may not know where to ask. So what are you overlooking can be a great clarifying question for a client. What was your intention when? What was your intention when you canceled that doctor's appointment? So I don't want to say the more details we have, the deeper we can go, but we do need to have a good understanding of a client's situation in order to get to the deeper layers. It seems mundane, but there's a lot of richness in it. Visioning questions. So we're going to do a full module on supporting clients to create a bigger vision for themselves, like a project or a home or a business or a relationship, like at the outset, like this is my big goal, right? Oftentimes when a client comes to you and you clarify like why they're going to work with you, they have big goals that you want to support them to vision. We're going to do a full training on that. For now, when I talk about visioning questions, I don't mean that big vision necessarily, but throughout any coaching call, almost any coaching call, like 95% of the time, opportunities for little visioning are going to come up. So what I mean by little visioning is you want to use these questions when you're speaking with a client about something going on for them, and you sense that either something needs to change or something needs to be tweaked. If you're in a conversation with a client and you sense that an issue could be resolved and seen in a better way than the client is seeing it. If you sense that a client is settling for something, settling for a relationship, settling for a particular kind of program when they really want to run a different kind of program, you're settling anything, a visioning question is a great moment for a visioning question. When you are in conversation with a client and you sense that that client right then and there is ready for expansion, you want to ask a visioning question in that moment. And when you sense that there's a new creative idea that's or incentive that's ready to emerge, that needs support. So here are some examples. Let's say you're speaking with a client and the idea, even though they haven't hired you for this, maybe they hired you for X, Y, and Z, but the idea of owning their own business comes up, right? What would it look like if you owned your own business? What would it look like if you had a child, if that comes up? What would it look like if you found your perfect home? Or let's say you're speaking with a client and you're seeing that something needs to change, something needs to be tweaked. If you could change one thing about X, whatever it is that they're speaking about your team, about your business, about your kitchen, you know, whatever it is. If you could change one thing about X, what would it be? This question hits on, it's a visioning question. It helps the client vision by helping them target what's not working. Sometimes it's easier to envision a new way of being when we can be present to what about that new way of being isn't working. Here's another example of a visioning question. If you could have this any way that you want, how would you have it? I love this question because most people at some point in their lives learned that they can't have what they want. They can't, you know, whatever it is for them, they can't have what they want. And one of our purposes as practitioners is to give our clients permission to go after the things that they haven't given themselves permission for. Whether it's freedom from their family or, you know, a particular object or a way of being or a type of relationship, whatever it is, it can be profound for an individual who hasn't, so number one, just to see that they haven't given themselves permission. And then number two, it's not like we're all powerful gurus that are giving them permission, but to open up the space for a client to have permission to go after something they desire. So if you could have this any way that you want, because so many people don't even ask themselves that question, right? If you could have your home any way that you want, if you could have your relationship any way that you want, if you could have the ideal client that you want, if you could have your relationship with your family any way that you want, right? So to even just open that up for someone, if you could have this any way that you want, how would you have it? Another great visioning question, what would the best possible outcome look like here? What would the best possible outcome look like here? We're trained not to give ourselves permission to have what we want, and we're also trained often to under-expect. Part of our job as practitioners is to support our clients in having expectations that are worthy of who they are. We don't want them to have unrealistic expectations of anything, but we do want to support them to not underexpect. So what would the best possible outcome look like here is a question that supports in this. Another example of a great visioning question, what would an ideal X look like? What would an ideal wedding look like? What would an ideal schedule look like? What would an ideal team look like? Similar as the best possible outcome, right? And the if you could have this any way that you want. Or simply, what would you like to have happen here? This is a clarifying question and a visioning question. Oftentimes a client will like something, let's say something awful happened, right? And they come in and they're like tell you this whole situation, right? And they're just feeling so icky about it. And it, part of the service is just to hold the space for them to express. But asking the question of what would you like to have happen here with this situation, right, that they just shared, it's a moment for them to actually pause and then they can actually assess outcomes that they would like to have, which is a real service for a client who might have had a terrible experience happen and then they think there's no opportunities. Another nice visioning question can be this one. Where does the universe want you to stretch next? Or where does spirit want you to stretch next? Sometimes the giving permission is not about our egos giving us permission, but if we can connect to something higher than us. There's an example of a question on that spirit level of learning and transformation. Sometimes when we can connect to something higher than us, like universe or spirit or nature, or where would your ancestors want you to stretch next, right? It creates a trust because most people have a trust in something bigger than themselves. And if they can think into, you know, a vision into that, they're giving themselves permission. I know moving through a lot of information quickly today, I told you it's not going to be a lot of processing, but I do want to check in. If there are any questions, you can raise your hand. And also, like, what are you seeing so far? What's striking you so far? What feels interesting so far? So that I'm not talking this whole class. What are you guys seeing? Anybody want to share? Are you with me? Is this helpful? Yeah, okay.
I'll jump in.
Awesome, thanks.
What I'm seeing about questions is that questions very deftly turn it over to the client to come up with a solution and keeps them from putting you up on a pedestal or creating an uneven relationship. And I find that great.
Yeah, still beautifully said. I'm so glad you're sharing and articulating in that way, 100%. It's part of what levels the relationship. And also back to what we were talking about last week with foundations of questions, it supports in not being in consulting mode all the time. Even for practitioners who are readers, like I work with a lot of people that read energy or tarot readers or, can communicate with lost, ancestors and all of that, even if you're spot on in your readings, you want to, I think, the best type of support and supporting the client to transform and to deeply take in the consulting that you're doing, we can call the readings consulting, is to follow up with questions afterwards so that it's not just a one-way street of giving information, but it supports the client in integrating and also finding their own wisdom and their own priority points and making their own connections in what you're sharing. So whether you're a reader or you're intuitive or you're just, have a lot of information on whatever you consult on.
Yeah, I'll just jump back in that I find that very helpful because in the way that I want to work with people, I want people to grow, not just to keep, I want them to find the answers inside. And I show them how to do that, I guess, on a certain level, because I'm a reader and a healer and all that. But without the questions, and I do find I'm asking questions, but the variety and the kind of naming the different kind of ways in, I'm finding very helpful. It just it does release my responsibilities.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. And we don't want to take over responsibility in our sessions. The energetics are off. Good. Anyone else want to share before I share some other categories of questions? No? All right. Next category, I call these feeling questions. And these are questions that can support a client to feel either on the heart level or on the body level. So you want to use feeling questions. First of all, have I shared with this group, have I actually laid out the four levels of learning and transformation for you guys? No? Okay, let me just lay those out because it'll be helpful for questioning, but just in general. So there are four levels of learning and processing, or learning and transformation, I kind of use both, that as a practitioner you want to be thinking about when you work with clients. Most practitioners, not all, but most practitioners only consider the intellectual level of learning and processing, or if not, only one of the others. But what I have found is in order to create real transformation and long-lasting transformation that's integrated, you want to hit all four levels. So the first level is the mental or intellectual level of learning and transformation. So this is because human beings need to understand things cognitively in order to learn, right? We need to be able to perceive with our brain new ideas, make connections between issues, see things that we haven't seen. So a lot of the time, we're working on the intellectual level of learning and processing. It's very, very, very important. Most practitioners stop there, though, and to actually create the transformation, you need to go deeper. So after the intellectual level of learning and processing, you want to think about, and you have, it doesn't have to be in this order, by the way. You want to think about the heart level of learning and processing. Heart level of learning and processing is this. In order for a client to really take in information and be able to integrate it and use it for themselves, they need to feel connected to it on an emotional level. There needs to be an emotional resonance with it, whether that resonance is around joy or grief or, you know, whatever it is, or just that they feel it deeply in their heart. They need to feel the importance of it. If they don't feel the importance of it, it's very hard. Then it just, it's like a, just a piece of information that doesn't necessarily get integrated and used. From there, we want to also make sure that we're hitting at some points, I call it the spirit level of learning and transformation. I was just talking about that a few minutes ago. This isn't about religion. The person doesn't have to be religious for you to work or believe in God or really to believe in anything outside of themselves in order to work on the spirit level of learning and transformation. The spirit level of learning and transformation is about when you have a new piece of information, in order to use it and integrate it, you need to trust. You need to trust in it. So activating that spirit level of learning and transformation is about activating a connection between the client's ego to something bigger than the ego. Now that can be God, spirit, goddess, Buddha, higher power, nature, but it could also be their inner wisdom or their ancestors or their wise self or their experience. But whatever it is, we want to create some trust in the information that's being received. We want to hit that spirit level of learning and processing. And then the fourth level is the body level of learning and processing. We, as human beings and animals as well, when we can feel something, not just in our heart, you know, not just that heart level or emotional level of learning and processing, but in our whole body, we can make a body memory of whatever it is we're working with. And when we can make a body memory of whatever it is that we're working with, then it's stored inside of us and we have easier access to it. So you don't need to be formulaic, like, oh my God, every session I need to, you know, hit all these four things, because you don't want to drive yourself nuts. But I do want you to be aware of this just so that you can understand how people shift and grow and be experimenting. You know, a lot of the time you're going to be working on the intellectual level of learning and processing because that cognitive level is so important. And of course, mind and body, everything is connected. You know, I'm separating them out for our purposes here, but really there's mind-body connection and heart-mind, you know, like all the things. But I do want you to be aware of, you know, just lightly hitting them. And also, this will help you know when you need to shift some questioning. So for example, in this category of feeling questions, which is about supporting a client to connect on the body level or the heart level, you want to use them, it's good to use them either after a series of questions that are around intellectual or mental awareness or learning. When you sense that a client maybe has gotten too much into their head and they're overthinking something, you want to shift to a feeling question. For those of you that are students of the earth, as I am, and work with the elements, it's kind of like balancing out the elements in a way. You know, air, mental is a very airy, right? If the conversation or the client has gotten too much air, you want to bring another element in to balance that out for them. Same other way around, by the way, if things have gotten too heavy in a way that's not supportive for the client, if there's a lot of that earth and element, you probably want to bring in air or fire to be able to lift things up and open them up with a question or whatever else you're doing, right? So you want to use these feeling questions, again, after a series of intellectual awarenesses that have happened. If you sense a client has gotten too much in their head, if you sense that new information has come forward and the client is ready to seal it in on a deeper level. I also like to ask a feeling question if I'm sensing that the client's talking, like we're having a conversation, but there isn't an emotional resonance with what we're discussing. If it's just this matter-of-fact conversation, again, back to those four levels, I know it's going to be hard for the client to deeply integrate and then use what's coming through, and I want to bring a heart level in or a body level in. So examples of these feeling questions to activate the body or the heart level are just something as simple as how would that feel, right? If a client is speaking about an idea they have for a new project, right, like you're talking about this and that, ask the client, how would that feel if you were to do that? If you're speaking with a client and you're talking about a new plan or an issue that they're having or an idea, whatever it is, ask, how do you feel in your body right now? You know, and sometimes I'll even say, take a moment, close your eyes. How are you feeling in your body right now? What's your body telling you? Or how do you feel in your body as you describe that? You know, sometimes a client will be talking about an idea and it's like a great idea for all the reasonable reasons. And then I'll say, how do you feel in your body as you describe that? And they're like, oh, that's not for me at all. You know, like I don't know why I was sharing that. Another example of a feeling question, what does your heart tell you about this, right? What's your heart telling you about this? Sometimes that's a great question to use. Also, if a client is like, should I do this or should I do that? All these options, right? They're trying to figure it out on the mental level of learning and processing. And if you're just getting to a dead end there, bring it to the heart, right? What does your heart tell you about this? What energy do you associate with that? A client is talking about an idea or a past memory, you know, whatever it is. What because energy is felt in the body, not in the mind. What do you notice about the tone of your voice as you speak about your brother or whatever the issue is at hand? What do you notice about the tone of your voice? That's going to connect a client to how they're feeling, right, based on the tone of their voice. Another feeling question, what's underneath that? What's underneath that? So particularly if a client is saying, I'm confused or I'm worried, or I have a lot of anxiety. Worry and anxiety sound like feelings, and in some ways they are, right? Everything is connected, like I said. But worrying and anxiety are mostly about the mind. They're not about how you feel in your heart and your body. You may have symptoms of it, right, in your body, but worry and anxiety beliefs are in the mind. Usually underneath worry and anxiety, and oftentimes confusion too, is anger or grief or some other emotion. So if I have a client that's like talking about their worry a lot and their anxiety, and it's like, again, it's a dead end, I'll ask them, what's the emotion right underneath your worry? And then we'll be able to get to a deeper place and be able to create patterns. You can create patterns looking at anxiety too, but I just find it much more powerful to get to the feeling. Another example of a feeling question, what's an image or metaphor that reflects this situation, right? Whatever the situation that you're talking about. Images and metaphors. So before we are verbal, we are imagistic beings, right? Before we have the capacity to speak, we have the capacity to imagine. So first of all, this is just powerful because of that, right? It's so primal to come up with an image that represents a situation. If a client is too stuck in their head trying to find the words or express what something is, asking them what's an image or a metaphor that reflects this situation can help you get there quicker. Helps them feel, connect to their body, to their heart, and go beyond the verbal if it's needed. I also find from a creating awareness standpoint, sometimes I'll offer an image. As you're speaking, it reminds me of a racehorse waiting at the gate, just ready to go forward, right? Sometimes as a practitioner, bringing an image in can support a client to feel more about whatever issue at hand that they're talking about. What would feel, and then insert emotion here. What would feel exciting here? What would feel joyful here? What would feel inspiring? Whatever you know your client's values are. Any questions? Oh, Kristen's got a question. Can you give an example of how to create body awareness? So, Kristen, can you come off mute? Because I want to just hear a little bit more about what you're looking for here.
Hi.
Oh, there you
sorry,
are.
Yeah. Hello.
Hi.
Sorry. When you were talking about the four levels of learning and transformation, mm-hmm. I felt like you went into a lot more depth on the spirit and heart and mental, and I wanted to hear more sort of examples of what you meant by creating that learning levels of learning and transformation with the body. Like, what are some examples of how you would do that, I guess?
Yep. Yeah. So some are in the questions I just shared, like, how would that feel, or what energy do you associate with that? How do you feel in your body right now? So that's one way of doing it. Let me just say, right now I'm just skimming the surface on these four levels of learning and transformation. There's a lot of ways, but another way, for example, is let's say you're in conversation. This is off questioning, but still I think this will be helpful for everybody. Let's say you're in a session with a client and you've done some deeper work and you've uncovered that they have a whole part of themselves that's joyful that they never access. What you could do is you can lead them to close their eyes. And this doesn't have to take a lot of time at all, right? But you can lead them to close their eyes. Ask them, even if it's just in your tiny little pinky toe, where are you feeling joy in your body, right? Even if everything else is worry, like, where is that joy in your body? And just ask them to connect with that part of their body and to feel into it. And you can even speak with that part of their body. We'll get into some more of this with Befriend Your Fear a little bit more. But so you can even kind of get creative in those ways as well. But the most simple is, how do you feel in your body right now? Or how do you feel in your body as you describe that? Or, when you're in the room with X, how do you feel in your body? Like, just that's the most simple to create the body awareness. Is that helpful, Kristen, or do you have?
Yeah, it is helpful. I guess with the other three, I was thinking more like as you were teaching, as I was teaching actually, but I think I do this anyway, but I was just hoping for, I guess, a little bit more clarity to know whether or not I am doing it or how I could do it differently. So outside of the questioning part of it, how can you help? And maybe you'll go into this more later and we don't have to spend a lot of time on it today, but how do you?
Not too much in sacred depth. So I'll throw out just a couple other things to think about and we can always talk more on Facebook about it. A lot of times I'll ask a client to make a body memory of something, even just using the word body memory is highly suggestive, and especially if you have a client and you've asked them to close. So as soon as we close our eyes, we're already in a more suggestive state than when our eyes are open. So when you ask a client to close their eyes and feel into their body, just that alone is gonna go deeper because they've closed their eyes, they're in a more suggestive state. Oftentimes I'll ask a client to make a body memory. If we've done a process and they're feeling confident, right? Like we've done a visualization and now they feel confident, I'll ask them to make a body memory of that, to really breathe into it, to really be with it. So that's one way. And then you can get super creative. I mean, I have clients that I'll be like, get up. Okay, move to the part of the room where your inner wild woman would be. How is she sitting? How is she standing? You know, what position is she in? Like, really be in that, speak from that place. Or, something is feeling stuck. Okay, get up. Let's shake it out. Let's move it. Where are you feeling it? So you can, even if it's on the phone, you can get creative with certain clients who are willing to go there to really move them around and be in their bodies in different ways.
Thank you. That's really helpful.
Yeah, you're welcome. Great question. Who else? Four levels of learning and transformation, or these feeling questions. What cues do you have, or what are you seeing that feels important? Take a moment and put in the chat also, Nicole, I don't know if you're going to ask a question. Your face came up on my screen bigger. So I want to hear from you if you've got a cue or something you want to say. And also, I'd love for everybody to put in the chat, which of the four levels do you tend to hang out in the most or use as a crutch? And Nicole, did you have a cue?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Not really.
Okay.
It seemed like you started to get louder and then I didn't hear you again.
How about that?
Yep, that's great.
Okay. On the feeling questions, I love those and I ask those to my clients a lot. But I had a question. If your client is really not in touch with their feelings, they're very cerebral, as a lot of my clients are, that sometimes when I ask these feeling questions, it's difficult for them to access that. Yeah. Do you have any tips or advice on how to help them bridge that gap?
Yeah. So first of all, normalize it, right? Sometimes the shame or the self-judgment of I don't know how I feel can be the biggest thing standing in the way. So I like to say to people, like, it's totally normal and there's no wrong answer here. And sometimes you'll know right away and sometimes it's step by step. So just number one, the normalizing can really, really help. And then from there, you know, it'll vary client to client, but you know, you can sometimes ask a question like, you know, if your heart could speak right now, what's about this situation, what would it say, right? So it's not this like, close your eyes and feel into your heart. And like, some clients are going to love that. Others, you have to almost be a little sneakier and have it seem like it's the intellectual of learning, you know, the intellectual level, but it's really not. So like, if your heart could speak right now, right? Or if there's one thing that your belly wanted you to remember from that situation with your mother, what would it be, right? So so that's a way to sometimes ease people in as well. I'm trying to think. I'm sure I've got some other ways that aren't coming to mind right now, but is that good for now? Or if anybody else has any ideas, also pop it in the chat. What's that? Is that kind of bringing up some ideas for you, Nicole?
Yeah, that's helpful. And I think it's, Some of my clients like love like really tuning in, and then some of them are really stuck here, mm-hmm. Because they've pretty much been brought up to not trust how they feel, or not show how they feel. So I like kind of approaching it, kind of not tricking them, but
yeah,
approaching it from making them think about it instead of about the feeling questions instead of diving into like just feel it.
Yeah, totally. So you can get in kind of the back door that way. Another way is having them, you don't want to do this too much on like live sessions with clients, but another way sometimes is journaling. So even though journaling is verbal, if you give certain rules with journaling, like I'm going to ask you a question and I don't want you to think about the answer. I just want you to write as fast as you can for a full minute without stopping. And just, you can even repeat the last phrase if you're not sure what to write next, but sometimes this writing quick and saying like, don't edit what you're writing, just write, can access a deeper level of consciousness for clients.
Okay, great. Thanks, Joanna.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Could you do it backwards? Like the clients who are all wrapped up in their body and they feel this way and I feel that and it's tingling here and you can't get them out of that. How would you guide them back to a place of spirit or intellect or wherever?
Right. And that's what I was saying. You want to balance it out. So for like over feelers, right? No, we like feeling is great, but anything in excess is going to stymie forward progress, right? And so when we see that, again, like as a practitioner, we want to balance it out, right? So ask a question that's really going to appeal to the brain. It's going to be different in each situation and with each client, but for example, I hear that you're feeling, and you're feeling into this and this and this. If you were a CEO, what decision would you make here? Or if you were a strategist in this situation, what would your inner strategist have to say about this? Or if there were three facts that felt most important here, what would those three facts be? Do you guys see how each of those questions appeals more to the intellect than the heart? That makes sense, Autumn?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, so I love these questions. And it is like when we can, again, when we can support our clients to be activated in these different levels, we're going to get the best results. Great. All right. Motivation questions. That's another category. So when a human being is aware of their motivation for something, why they want to do something, it's usually 99% of the time easier for them to move forward and take action on the thing. So you want to use motivation questions when you sense that your client needs motivation. They need a bigger reason. They need a mission. They need inspiration in order to move forward, right? And some of this is about the spirit level too, because the other thing is spirit, connection to spirit creates trust, but also spirit, again, however you're defining spirit, whether it's God or whether it's inner wisdom, there's inspiration there as well. But when we're aware of our motivations and also when we're inspired by our motivations, that's when that's one of the things that helps us take more action. So motivation questions can look like this. What's your deep why, right? A client is talking about something they want to do. What's your deep why around this? Or why is that so important to you? That's a motivation question. You know, it can be about a bigger vision, but like, or it could be about just a decision that they want to make. Why is that so important to you? What about that excites you? What value will this experience have for you if you step into it? Why would spirit be asking you to do this? Or insert spirit with whatever language of, you know, something bigger than their ego resonates for the client. What's the higher reason here? next category, I call it percentage or number questions. Percentage or number questions. You want to use a percentage or number question when a client needs support distinguishing story from reality. When a client needs support distinguishing story from a reality, when a client is unclear about their truth with a capital T, or when a client is confused, really confused about something in their life, or if a client has shared something that to you as the practitioner seems a little misaligned or confused, a percentage or number question is a great clarifier between the story and the reality or the truth. So examples of this is on a scale of 1 to 10, how true is that statement, right? Again, and the reason why it distinguishes the story from the reality is we're bringing it to this real like strategic numbers question, right? Intellectual level, looking at what's the thing here, right? And if a client is just sharing something that's total BS that you know is not true for them, on a scale of 1 to 2, how true is that statement? It can help them see. What percentage of your friends are actually not thinking about your best interest, right? If a client is talking about how all of their friends are unreliable, they don't think about their best interest, it might be that they've just had a couple of really shitty situations, but it doesn't mean that none of their friends are thinking about their best interest. So what percentage of friends are actually not thinking about your best interest is a great question to help distinguish between story and reality. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you actually want to apply for that job, right? A client is talking about a job. You're sensing that this is like a should job, not a deep desire job. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you actually want? It can help a client see what is true for them. Uncovering the obstacle questions and insight into the obstacle questions. I'm not going to talk too much about those right now because basically we have many months of looking at fears and beliefs and self-sabotage, and we're going to talk so much about obstacles. But just briefly now, as you're starting to practice and all of that, we want as practitioners to support clients to see the obstacles that are standing in their way and to have insight into those obstacles. So what's standing in your way? As simple as that. What's challenging for you here? What are you scared of? Insight into the obstacle questions. Why are you so attached to this particular obstacle once you've uncovered the obstacle, right? This is a little bit of a bolder question. Why are you attached to something? But I find it can be really piercing for people and get them to the truth. I give other examples in the handout you'll get around these obstacle questions. Another category is strategizing. We're also going to do a full call or two on strategizing. We do it along with visioning, but I do want to mention it here. Even if you are a total, most of your work is on the body level or the heart level, or you're a healer or a spiritual guide or a reader, you know, whatever it is, I want to encourage you to, even if you just spend a little bit of time at the end of a session, I want to encourage you to think about strategizing as part of the work that you do. Strategizing can mean either strategizing out a bigger plan, like a longer-term plan. We'll get to that in our strategizing module. Or it can be just strategizing on the little piece that came up in that session. It really helps people take action, whether the action is inner action or outer action, but it supports clients to continue to do the work after the session itself or to go after what they want. So, you know, if you're going to do it at the end of a session, it can be as simple as what are three action steps that you want to take over the next week, right? Just that, just strategizing a couple of action steps. In a more nuanced way, as it comes up in the middle of conversations, you also just want to strategize on ideas as they come up. So what would you like to do differently? That's creating a difference. Like somebody just hates, or I shouldn't say hates. Somebody is having a lot of trouble with their virtual assistant and is just not, it's not working, right? What would you like to do differently? I always put visioning and strategizing together when we do the bigger module because they're very much related. What would you like to do differently is a little bit of a visioning question and starting to strategize. What can you change about this situation immediately? The pandemic hit. And a working mom all of a sudden has her kids at home and there's total chaos. There's a lot that can't be changed. What can you change about this immediately? Sometimes it's as simple as what are some things you'd like to do to achieve that, right? A client is speaking about a goal or a vision. What are some things you'd like to do to achieve that? Getting support questions. You want to ask a getting support question when a client is overwhelmed or taking on too much, which, by the way, happens a lot these days for all of us, right? So I was talking about permission before. One of the other things that just like as a society as a whole, a lot of us are trained into is not giving ourselves permission to receive support. We've learned in one way or another that it's not strong. It's like you're inadequate if you need support, or people are going to be upset if I ask them to help me. If I reach out, I should be able to do this all on my own, or I don't have a right to ask. One of our roles as practitioners is to empower our clients to know that they don't have to do things on their own and that they get to make requests. At one point I was sharing about, like the two things that are always happening in a session. It's like supporting a client with the issue at hand and then supporting them just through your relationship and how you show up and what you normalize. Just that can correct bigger dynamics for the client. This is one of those places. So examples of getting support questions are who can help you with this? Right? A client is talking about something they want to do or a current situation that they're in, and you sense that, or they may even say that they're overwhelmed, or you sense that they're taking on too much, or you sense if they're going to step into it, they'll get overwhelmed, or that they may not be able to do it on their own. Who can help you with this? Or if you knew that they would say yes no matter what, who would you ask for help? Now, that doesn't guarantee that the person is going to say yes, but this is part of the giving permission. If our client is scared that people won't say yes to their request, they may not even ask in the first place. What can you delegate? What request can you make? What other resources can you call upon here? Because sometimes the support isn't from another person, right? There are other ways to get support, not just from people. What are some of the resources that you can call upon here? simplifying questions. You want to use a simplifying question when a client is overwhelmed also, like the getting support, when they're taking on too much, or when they're unhappy with a current situation. What can you say no to starting today, right? So sometimes when somebody's overwhelmed, it's about bringing in more support. And sometimes when somebody's overwhelmed, it's about letting go of what they don't need to be holding on to. What can you say no to starting today? What are you tolerating that you don't need to tolerate anymore? What's no longer serving? Right? Sometimes I see this like in business a lot. Let's say somebody has a program and it's got so many bells and whistles, and at some point it just becomes unwieldy, and they think they have to keep on doing it that way. You know, what can you simplify here? What's no longer serving here? What's no longer aligned? Also, if somebody's got a lot going on and they're overwhelmed, what's the priority? Another thing that as sacred depth practitioners that we want to normalize is that it's okay not to get everything done tomorrow. Again, like particularly the coaching industry, the transformational industry, laws of manifestation are like, you can do a million things and you can do them by tomorrow or next week or whatever it is. Not always the case, right? What's the priority? Integration questions. After a lot of awareness has been created, you want to ask an integration question. Or if there have been different strands or threads or ideas that are coming through that have surfaced, you want to ask an integration question. And then, of course, at the end, the very tail end of every session, we already know this, you want to ask an integration question. So integration questions can be as simple as, what are you seeing here for yourself, right? A lot, maybe you're halfway through the session and like so much has come through, all these different ideas. I'll often say, let's take a pause here. I know there's still more that we're going to be looking at on our call today, but so much has come through. What are you seeing here for yourself so far? It's a moment to pause and integrate. More and more and more and more new information or breakthrough or whatever it is isn't always, it isn't usually what's best for a client. You know, the way that we all learn is like there's new information, whether that information is from our brain or our heart or our body or whatever, and then we want to integrate. And then we want to take in some new information, and then we want to integrate again. That's how the learning will stick. That's how the new information will be retained. What's important about this? Another integration question. If a client is talking about something and it's a situation or a new idea or whatever it is, and we're talking about a lot of different things, okay, so we've spoken about a lot here. What's important about all of this? What are you learning as you're sharing all of this with me? What's the wisdom? You know, we've got all of these strands. What's the wisdom that's coming through? Or even, like, what's the connection between all of these strands that are coming through? What's your takeaway? So this, again, it goes back to pacing. Of course, I know we all want to over-deliver, and we think that over-delivering is like getting the most information by the end of the session, but that's not, if we're talking, if your client is a robot, yes. If your client is a human being, you want pauses for integration. And we've already spoken about yes or no questions. Again, they can be so powerful, but use them sparingly. They'll be most powerful if you use them only seldomly. And in moments when a client is on the verge of making a serious commitment or a decision. That's the moment for a yes or no question. Almost any other time, a yes or no question is not the right question. You're narrowing the field too much. So again, you want to use it when a client is on the verge of making a serious commitment or a serious decision. Like they're really ready. It's a big deal when they're ready. Are you done with staying up so late? Now, you're not going to ask this question at the beginning of the conversation, right? If a client presents and they're like, stay up too late, blah, 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 right? You're going to look at patterning or this or that. When you know that they've gotten to the breakthrough, ask the yes or no question. Are you done with staying up so late? The yes or the no is a signal, like the utterance of that is a signal to their psyche that they are ready for the decision. Are you ready to commit to blueprinting every day? That's a question I often ask with clients that need more organization with their plans. Are you willing to let go of your relationship? Now, that's a question like that maybe isn't like right on the verge of making a serious decision. It might be as a client is opening up to considering this new way of being, that maybe they are going to be okay without this relationship. But it's still like a moment of choice. The yes or no is really when it's a moment of choice. Are you finished allowing yourself to be a doormat? Right? A moment of choice. Interruption questions. So I get this question a lot. I have a client that talks so much, or they're just like, you know, they're meandering all over the place. Is it okay for me to interrupt them? And the answer is yes, absolutely. So if you have a client that has been talking way too much and not getting to the point through all of the talk, or they're distracting themselves with details or unimportant threads, then you want to ask an interruption question. And I will actually, like, usually you have to interrupt, right? So a client is talking. Don't feel scared. I will let someone go. Like, once I start to sense that they're going over, I'll still let them go another 30 seconds just in case they're going to come back around to, you know, what they need to. But if not, in a very loving way, it's going to be in mid-sentence for them, right? That I'm going to say, I want to stop you here. I'll say, I love all that you're sharing, or I can feel your passion, or, you know, whatever it is. But I'll just say, like, I'm going to stop you here. There's a lot of great information. What's the essence of what you're sharing? Right? That's a great interruption question. What's the essence of what you're sharing? Or what feels most important about all that you're sharing, right? These questions help them get to the point. Sometimes if it's the container is tight enough, if it's a client that I know we've been working together, it's not our first session. Sometimes even on the first session I might, but I know they trust me. I'll say, I sense you're beating around the bush. What are you avoiding here? Right? So don't be scared to interrupt and support a client to get back on a path to get them to whatever they wanted to get to by the end of that session. Sometimes as human beings, we do need to meander a little bit. You know, it's not about being so laser focused. And sometimes the meandering can bring the deeper wisdom. So you want to, you know, like this, it's an experimentation for you as the practitioner to sense into these things and know when the right moment. I can't give you a, like, this is the moment to interrupt. I wish, like with so many things, it's an art, not a science, but I want you to start being a little bit more aware of that. Challenge questions. These are very coachy, but they can be really useful sometimes. So these aren't exactly questions. They're more like invitations, but you phrase them in a question. You want to use a challenge question in a moment when a client is ready to stretch beyond their perceived limitations. When you sense a client is ready to stretch beyond their perceived limitations, a challenge question can lovingly push a client beyond what she thinks is possible for herself. The challenges are always going to involve a measurable action. A measurable action. So here are some examples. I challenge you to generate 3 sales calls this week. How does that land for you? I challenge you to stop complaining for a full week. What do you think? There's always going to be a question after that, right? Because it's an invitation. You know, you're not just telling your client to do this. I sense that's too easy for you. How can you go further? Your client can accept or decline or negotiate the challenge. Any one of those is fine, right? The client is always right and knows what they want. The trick with the challenge question is to make it motivating, but also not shameful if the client isn't up for it yet. That's the balance that you want to hit there. Okay, I've got a couple more. Intention setting questions. You want to use an intention setting question when a client is ready to make a new commitment, an inner or an outer commitment. What intention would you like to set? What will your focus for this month be? For those of you that work with the phases of the moon, like I sometimes do, you want to ask intention setting questions on new moons. Another really nice type of intention setting question, what's the new energy that you want to bring into this project? Intentions are about outer things, but we can also have inner intentions as well. Confrontational questions. Sometimes, as practitioners, what is going to be best for our clients is for us to be bold and fierce and loving at the same time and be a little confrontational. Confrontational questions help clients jump over blocks because we are being slightly confrontational with them. And again, loving at the same time. Do you guys know what I mean by that? Do you know how every now and again it's like we need the fire and we need someone to be that upfront with us in order to shake us out of whatever the story is or the stuck places or whatever it is? Like, and so part of this also, again, for those of you that work with energy or work with the elements, sometimes I know a client needs water from me. You know, she needs like flow and soft love and it's all okay, right? Like, and that's, I mean, I need a lot of that sometimes too, especially in these times, right? But other times a client needs fire from me, you know, like they need for me to be fierce with them. And one isn't more valuable than the other. It's about what's required in that moment. So you wanna start to ask yourself, like, what is the energy? Not just what's the question that's required, or what's the information that wants to, you know, around creating awareness that wants to be created here, but what's the energy that's required here? So examples of confrontational questions. This is a yes or no one, this first one, but you'll see why it's a good yes or no question. What if what you just shared was actually not true at all? Or here's another way of saying that last question. I use this a lot. I feel like I want to call BS on what you just said. What do you think about that? Right? I just flat out say it. Like, I want to call BS. on that. Here's another example of a confrontational question. It's a yes or no. Is it possible that your relationship is wrong for you? So sometimes we need to ask confrontational questions, but other times we want to ask encouraging questions. So encouraging questions are when a client is thinking about stretching herself, but needs extra encouragement or assurance or motivation. Here's an example. It feels like you're almost there. What do you need to tweak to feel ready with this online dating profile? Right? She's stretching herself, but she just needs that extra encouragement to put that profile live. And then last category of questions for right now, assessment questions. You want to use an assessment question when a project or an initiative has either come to an end or come to a turning point or come to an obstacle. So if you've got a project that's either come to an end or a turning point or is just stuck, sometimes assessment questions can be really helpful. Examples of assessment questions are what's working or what has worked. It helps celebrate back to celebrations, but it also helps a client to assess, okay, in this program, this and this and this are working, right? What's not working? This and this and this and this. So you want to ask what's not working and why. What can you learn from this situation? It's assessing it. What are your resources and strengths in this project? Again, so an assessment is great for moments. So you want to do it when something's coming to completion because it helps integrate whatever's coming to completion, and it helps a client also let go of something that they're ready to let go of. For those of you that have done Sacred Rhythms with me, you know, this is about the harvest. This is about the autumn, right? So we can't let go. Winter is about the letting go until we assess and celebrate and honor and separate the wheat from the chaff in the autumn. We want to ask assessment questions at a turning point, again, so we know what's the good that we can take with us into the next phase, and then what is it that we want to leave behind? What have we learned? What do we want to change? Okay, we've got just a couple of minutes left. As I said at the beginning of this call, you're not supposed to integrate everything I shared with you on this call. And I wanted to go through, you're going to get a sheet with all of this, but I wanted to go through and explain because I don't want you to just randomly ask questions like I did when I first started coaching. I want you to have an understanding that's going to help you ask the best questions. So before we wrap for today, I'm going to ask you two questions. Number one, of all of the different categories we looked at today, what are two that you really want to experiment with the most over this next week? Like, which ones are you feeling drawn to that maybe you don't normally use, but you're like, ooh, I can see how those would be helpful? You can experiment with all of them over these weeks, but it's good to kind of have a little bit of a goal. Nicole's saying the confrontational and the interruption. Yeah, those are kind of can be the scariest sometimes too. So I'm glad that you're going to experiment with those. Kathy's saying the strategizing and getting support. Yeah, and Kathy, I can see how maybe I might not be right, but maybe you shy away sometimes from the strategizing because of the deep and intuitive work that you do. So I'm glad you'll be looking at strategizing. Jeannie, feeling questions. Good. The interruption and the challenge questions, those are big. tell visioning and integration, because you do so much work with the body and that deeper layers, I think those will be really great to play with. Amy, challenging questions. Yep, interruption and integration. Yeah, Kristen's going to experiment with the number questions. Those can be powerful. Good. And then last question, what are you taking away from this call? Like, what are you, something that you're really taking away either about questioning or, just who you are as a practitioner or understanding transformation? What's something that you're really taking away from this call? And I'd love to hear on some of those as well. You can type them in, or if anybody wants to speak, I think we have time for one, to hear one or two of you. Kathy's taking that you're good at questions, yeah, and how useful they are. Anyone want to have their voice heard? I'd love to hear. Oh, Jackie, did you?
Yeah, what I find is that I'm able to ask questions intuitively, so I'd like to have a go at actually consciously formulating my questions and taking the time to think about my questions as I go along. It seems like actually quite hard, so I want to give it a go and see. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm so glad. And that's homework for everybody, is I want to encourage you to think, don't be scared with a client. Like I said, sometimes I'll say, I just need a moment here because I want to make sure I'm asking the right question, and really take a moment and think about it. If you're like me, like I said, those first months that I was coaching, I had lists of questions in front of me. Don't be scared to do that either. It's a great way to integrate. Beautiful. Amy's saying that she needs to bring in more questions. Good, I'm glad you're seeing that. Nicole's saying there's lots of different ways to support clients in uncovering their own answers. Yeah, the other thing is, knowing all of these questions helps move us away from consulting when consulting isn't needed, right? Beautiful. Well, thank you all of you for your presence. It's great to see all of you. I want to see you in the Facebook group. Please let me know how things are going and what you need. And I will talk with you very soon. Have a wonderful rest of your day.